when people start training, there's usually a little grace period they go through. For monks, it doesn't usually last more than a few months before it starts getting more difficult. And, you know, it makes sense. You're working on habits that go very deep and have been getting established for a long time. You're working on karmic jangles that underlie those habits that are very deeply entrenched and go back lifetimes. You see it in so many lay trainees who are lay people who come and are enthusiastic, and you always have to watch the people who are very enthusiastic because they almost never stick it out. If you're very enthusiastic about this, you're missing something in the picture. you know, there's an unrealistic enthusiasm, and usually the people who are more suited to the training, more genuinely suited, more genuinely ready for it, are happy to have found it, and then they have a pretty good instinct that this is going to be tough going. And those are the people more likely to stick with it. Enthusiasm doesn't get you very far at all, because one can be very attracted and then very repelled and be fleeing as soon as one's really repelled. Further on in training, after years and years, and especially after someone's had a kensho, sometimes happens early on, more often happens a little later, but then because faith and certainty are more deeply established, then some of the deeper spiritual need can start to come to the surface, and that can have deep pain in it. And it's observable, really observable fact, that this is another kind of watershed point when a lot of people will kind of cash in at that point and take their winnings and leave training then. And if they don't do so, then they're in for a hard slog then. Remember, Master used to talk about the time after transmission being another one of these times after someone's been transmitted, when it gets more difficult. In my experience, after every major step that you take, and you get a major boost in faith and certainty from that step, and you know, wonderful, helpful things happen at that time, and then it's another hard slog through another layer of difficult spiritual need. This is one of the reasons why the need for faith as a continuing aspect of our spiritual life is emphasized so strongly in Soto Zen. We don't say, well, you're going to get enlightened and then you're going to be on cruise for the rest of your life, because it actually doesn't work that way. You may experience enlightenment very deeply, and that experience will be a passing thing, and then we'll see how one does it integrating that experience and its implications into one's daily life. And that is a difficult thing to do. Not by any means impossible. It takes time and it takes working through a lot of doubt and a lot of fear. And sometimes a lot of mental confusion and delusion. When some of that karma, this deeper karma, starts coming up, it can be incredibly confusing. Because it's not like it initially comes up in a way that's very recognizable as what it actually is. It may take years and years for something to distill out. We finally see what it is that's causing all the trouble. In the meantime, you know, the need for faith is very great. And however far one has gone in training, you know, in a way it's a whole new story each day. And a new beginning on training. Rinmaster, when I was a very young monk, Rinmaster would talk about, you know, when we put our kesa on our head in the morning and recite the kesa verse, you know, how great and wondrous are the clothes of enlightenment. Enlightenment, formless and embracing every treasure, I wish to unfold the Buddha's teaching that I may help all living things. You don't just recite that once when you're ordained. You recite it every day, and you need it every day. You need it every day. You need to undertake the training anew every day. And at times, the temptation to just give up and go do something that's easier is very, very enticing to people. Until, you know, further on in training, it's kind of like everything else is worse. And that's about, you know, however hard it is, everything else you can think of is worse. Then you're really hooked, you see. You might say that's cold comfort. It may not be much comfort at all, but at least it helps keep you at it. And another thing Ramesh used to say, the truth, the whole truth, and anything else that works. It may be hard to be positive, but if you know that everything else is worse, at least you'll stick to it. And this talk really is about the importance of sticking to it. That unless you stick to it through the tough times, it's not so hard to stick to it through the easy times. I remember, I've told this story before, that one of our monks had a wonderful kensho, and it was a very public one. The person had it right in their one of the public ceremonies you do and that can be done in recognition of becoming a full priest. And it happened right there in front of everyone. And it was quite magnificent. It was just a person leaped beyond the fear completely and was just like awesome. And was then on cloud nine for a number of months. And I happened to be the person's precepts master. And I told the person at one point, you know, it's going to get really tough one of these days. It's going to get really tough. And after, you know, another month or two had passed, he said, you said it was going to be really tough. But, you know, it hasn't. It's great. Another couple of years, the person was gone back to lay life. It got really tough. So, you know, it's really important for people doing monastic training. I think people who are going to do this, whether they're lay, trainee, or a monk, in a way they've got to be able to burn their bridges and say, however awful it gets at times, I'm going to stick it out. And I'm going to stick it out. And when a person comes to a master with how awful it is, the master says, you know, you only have to do this one moment at a time. You only have to do it 1 hour at a time, 1 day at a time. So let's just work on it today and see how it is tomorrow. And if it's totally awful tomorrow, well then it's another day that you just have to do it one today. You don't have to do it, you know, that day for the next month of awfulness or the next year of awfulness. You only have to do it for that one moment, that 1 hour, that 1 day. And when it's really bad enough, then it's got to be just literally one moment at a time. and you're really thrown back on meditation. So, you know, you can take the glass half empty view that this is just awful and there's no end in sight, or you can take that glass half full view that, man, I'm getting a real workout in meditation. I'm really learning what it is to meditate because nothing else works. And you are a fortunate person if you ever realize, ever in your life, if you ever really realize fully, I've had this good fortune more than once now. I count myself very fortunate in this, and I hope I'll remember it when the times get really rough again, which they do, you know, now and then. You're a fortunate person if you ever, even once in your life, come to that clear realization that all I can do is meditate, and I actually can meditate in this. If you can actually be in the middle of hell itself and realize that, man, the merit is immense merit. An incalculable merit in that. You get then you really get something. And you know you're not going to get that in heaven. You're only going to get that in hell. Hell is very much underappreciated. Not that I like it when I'm there, you know, but it's really underappreciated. We don't realize what an educational opportunity it is. But we do realize it when we get that point. That this is totally awful, and I can sit still here, and it is enough. It is enough. And I can look up in this place. I can do that. And sometimes you just have to go to the very darkest place to really get that point. You know, as a priest, one sees people come to that point, because everyone's going to come to that point at some place or sometimes more than once in their life. Or if not that, in the time they're dying, we're all going to come to that. Saint and sinner alike, you're all going to come to that. And you see people come to that. You see them making their choices there. You see some people turn away from it and go the route of drugs or something to try to cope with the pain. You see the other people come to it and take that step into the pain and do what Messamokian calls nosedive in it. Go right in the middle of it. Sit still, open your heart to it, and look up. And find it can't hurt you. Can't hurt the real you. But if you think I'm looked down on the people who come to the edge of it and turn back, turn away from it, I don't. Because I do know from my own experience how bad it can be. And, man, I'll tell you, when you're really on hands and knees in the full whirlwind of spiritual pain, anyone who either goes through it or runs from it has your sympathy, flat out. You're in no position to be judging anyone or feeling superior to anyone. In fact, you simply don't know whether you're going to get through it yourself. That's where I really learned to ask for help, I have to say. That's where I finally got it on asking for help. It's amazing what a good education that gives you, if you let it. You never know how much you need to ask for help until you don't know whether you're going to keep your sanity, your life, anything. It's so intense. And yet, when you really sit still and you listen to that quiet, deep place, there's a place of stillness that you can hold on to in the middle of it. You can hold on to that place, and it just, that's the place of nothing matters. It doesn't matter. Let it rip. It doesn't matter. When you read How to Grow a Lotus Blossom, which is the best description of this I know of, you know, in a very distilled down form, you get a longer description of it in St. John of Cross's Dark Night of the Soul, by the way. But you realize the first several chapters of Lotus Blossom, that's what happened during that period. It took several months. And the intensity of what Rim Master is distilling down to into a few words is pretty indescribable, actually. It's that great, great load of karmic need all the way up to the surface now, all clamoring for help. And feeling as a reaper of karma, you've got to be able to feel, and you do feel that karma coming due as it comes to the surface, coming due for its final cleaning. It's frightening when you're going into it. It's terrifying as you're going into it. Not so scary once you're in the middle of it and you've accepted it. It's unbelievably intense, and you really don't even know whether your body will be able to endure what it goes through. I had weeks on end where at night I would lie there most awake almost all night. Maybe I might get a couple hours sleep. And my heart would be beating so hard, my body would literally be rocking from the beating of my heart. It was, the heart was releasing. And you don't know, man, my heart might just stop under this strain. And you have to decide at this point. You have to decide, do I really care? Do I really care? What am I, even if I survive it, I'm only going to live another decade or two or three anyway. What is it that matters here? What is it that is real? You just cry out for help and sit still in that place. River Master used to say, and I'd be amazed sometimes the way she said, just sit still, it can't hurt you. Nothing can hurt you. And she'd say it with this utter confidence, and I'd just be awed by it. This is a fearless person. Not a person who does not know fear. River Master knew fear as well as anyone. But a person who knew how to be afraid at one level and unafraid at a deeper level, sitting still within it. It's a well-known principle in Buddhist teaching. I'm going to say it. I've said it many times. I'll say it again, that if you don't grasp after heaven, you won't push hell away. That if you get carried away by joy and happiness and ecstasy, then you will get carried away by fear and horror and grief, pain. Our job, whatever it is we're experiencing, is to take refuge in the eternal and sit still. And when there is ecstasy and joy, well, enjoy it. Certainly. It is there to be enjoyed, to be appreciated. Appreciation is a better word, because appreciation applies to all states, actually. And gratitude also is a good word, because gratitude applies to all states. You can be grateful for hell as well as for heaven. Our job is to sit still and look up whatever's going on, whatever realm we find ourselves in. Whatever feeling is passing through, whatever thought is passing through. And realize that all such things pass away, and there is that which does not pass away. And it is the purpose of meditation to open our hearts to that and take refuge in it. It isn't impossible to do this. It just takes all we've got at times. a way of faith, and a way of resolve. And training steadily, day in and day out, week in and week out, month in and month out, doing what can be done to the best of our ability, and not worrying about what can't be done. Doing what can be done to the best of our ability. That provides the foundation, the training foundation for going through those really rough patches. Generally speaking, a person doesn't get to the really difficult patches in spiritual life until enough of that steady training has been done. Have developed a foundation of merit upon which you can rely when you're going through the really tough patches, the really tough patches. And you know, losers can't be choosers. When you're going through a really tough patch, you just got to be glad you survived it, frankly. And hope for the best on your way through it. And pray for the best. Pray for help. But no one gets through those patches without it being a bit messy. Because it's just that tough. So we have to have compassion for ourselves and compassion for others when they're going through it too. Tough job on a teacher, because at times the teacher has to actually push a disciple into one of these and be quite tough on them. That doesn't mean the teacher isn't sympathizing. If the teacher's been through it themselves, and if they're an experienced teacher, they have been, they're sympathizing all right. They also know there's only one way to do it, and that's to actually go through the middle of it. You can't get around it. And you can't just avoid it forever. I've had the unhappy job of doing that a number of times, and it's always a little scary, and it's always something I don't enjoy doing. And you get the consequences, which sometimes the person really want to do it, and you get a bad reputation for the giving that shove. So when it works, it really works good. It works because of that person's faith, not in the end because of anything the teacher did, really. So my advice in this talk is simply, bottom line is, don't just give up when the going gets tough. Just keep slogging through and keep looking up. If we can do this when we're alive, then we can do it when we die. Don't underestimate the merit of just sticking to the training. Just going to sit one more time. You only ever have to sit one time at a time. You know, you don't have to do the whole next day's sitting, this sitting period. You just have to do this one. You don't do all your future bowing in this bow. You just do this bow. You don't do all your future work on the precepts and just work on this precept. You just work on this one that's needed right now. And keep your attention right in the present moment. And keep bringing it back to this present moment. Because that's where you're safe. Her master wrote in 1976, you know, don't worry about the past or fear the future. Live now without evil. That's still the best advice in the world for all of us, really all the time. And especially when it's getting really intense and really difficult. But if you weren't working at it the rest of the time, your likelihood of being able to do it in that time is not very great, you know. We give ourselves a leg up by working on it all the time. Then it's second nature. You know, it's second nature to just turn within when it starts to get intense.